The title of this conference by Father John Hardin is Present Day Challenges to Our Faith. Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin has been a consultant to the consortium from its beginning and is closely associated with its interests as a communication enterprise for religious women in the United States. Father Hardin.
We want to reflect on the present-day challenges to our faith, which we plan to look at first in terms of the crisis of faith that the Church is facing today, then how we ought to frankly profit from this crisis as a challenge to us. I might begin by saying that not too many years ago, I didn't used to begin retreat conferences on the subject of faith, but I know I better do it now. First, then, the crisis of faith in the world today. You might say there's almost no need to elaborate on the fact that for millions of Catholics in today's world, they are suffering from an identity crisis of faith. All the evidence indicates that a revolution is going on. There has been open conflict at the highest levels in the Church. The 1969 Synod of the Bishops was, in ways that have not yet become public, a conflict between not large but well-entrenched segments of the hierarchy and the Holy See. It met, you recall, just about a year after the publication of Humanae Vitae, 68, just long enough to polarize a large section of the Catholic Church into two camps. One camp, for example, has been led by men of the stature of Cardinal Sunens of Belgium, Bishop Carter of Canada, who have openly declared that Pope Paul is acting arbitrarily in directing the Catholic Church. We might happily remind ourselves that at that same synod in 69, practically all the bishops, in fact, no exception, all the bishops of communist-occupied territories of Africa and Asia, of Spain and Hispanic America, stood firmly behind the Pope. And in the clearest episcopal language, told their fellow hierarchs they were wrong. But this couldn't be going on in the top echelon of the Church without the rest of the Church being deeply affected. So it has been. Theologians like Hans Küng or Bernard Herring, both men of theological stature, have been writing openly, overtly, against the papacy. Within dioceses, ideas are published and practices condoned that are directly contrary to the historic teachings of Catholicism. Associations of laymen and of former religious openly advocating abortion. A large, still nominally Catholic hospital in Michigan, I just heard over the telephone within the last few days, is now beginning to practice sterilization. Not a few, again, nominally Catholic publications specialize in bringing into disrepute what Catholicism has always professed: devotion to Our Lady, to Christ's presence in the Eucharist, papal infallibility, the Church's right to pass final judgment in the moral order. I happen to work with the Episcopal Commission for Seminaries as a consultant. At our last meeting with the bishops, the chairman of the commission got up after about 2 days of reports in exasperation, said, "Brethren, what are we bishops for anyhow, if we cannot tell seminaries what to teach?" As a result of all these things, we won't dwell on this, sisters. It's just to drive in an opening wedge to make sure we're not living in a dream world. As a result, priests, religious, and the laity are often confused, frustrated, and bewildered. Is it any wonder? It is not a coincidence that in one large archdiocese this fall, 56 Catholic schools are closing. I talked recently to the Mother General of one of the communities that has many schools, past tense, had many schools in the archdiocese. She told me, "My problem is to find jobs for hundreds of sisters who've been teaching in over 30 schools out of work." The immediate reason, as I have been well informed, is the confusion in the minds of educators and teachers as to what is Catholic education, with the result that many parents honestly felt it was not worth the effort to support a dubious enterprise costing them millions of dollars in great sacrifice. One last note, closer to home. It is evidence mainly of a crisis in faith why there has been such a tragic decline in the American sisterhood, a net loss last year alone in the United States of over 7,200 sisters. So much for the picture. We need a backdrop if we're going to reflect prayerfully on the subject of faith in our own lives, to make sure that convent walls or religious habits are no insurance against the impact of what's happening in the world today. There are many ways of looking at what is happening in the church which we conveniently call a crisis of faith. Yet I think reductively they might be reduced to two. There is, first of all, one viewpoint that we might call pessimistic. It sees what's happening in the church as something that has been growing for centuries, with a prospect, if you want to call it such, that some are putting into print of having only a remnant of the faithful left. Theologians are now writing, these are the pessimists, about the diaspora, about a small huddling group of Catholics here and there, cowering for their lives, beleaguered, besieged, and persecuted, with no doubt the end of the world rather near at sight. Frankly, I don't share the opinion, it is not the judgment of the Holy See, of Pope John who saw the thing coming, or of Pope Paul. The other viewpoint is optimistic. In other words, reacting to the crisis, and instead of seeing it as a growing problem, practically insoluble, looking upon the turmoil in the church, and for us specifically, the confusion of the conflict in faith, as a providential opportunity, which I like to call a challenge. We want to look then, for the rest of this evening's conference, and recommending for your meditation, on what is happening as a providential opportunity. How so? First of all, realizing that for many people, their faith has been severely weakened, even lost. And let me reassure you, I shouldn't have used that verb. Let me caution you. It has been weakened and lost in priests, in religious, and in fact, as we're discovering, among bishops. And the main reason why the faith is weakened and lost is because it has not been strong enough. Sisters, I decided to give, if I might call it, a different retreat, or it'll be the same Catholic faith, I assure you. One reason was because I think we've got to look squarely at our own lives to see what's in need of reformation. Change and improvement are not strong enough. Conversion, reformation for some of us, are the words to use. To look into our own selves and discover, perhaps, the need for deepening and strengthening this faith on which everything else depends. Why should we look at our own faith with sobering caution? Because what's happened to others can happen to us. None of us, sisters, the youngest, I can now use the word, and the oldest, is safe. None of us is confirmed in grace. We're living in the same world that those whom we have known, perhaps, and loved, and tragically lost. I know what I am talking about. I have lost, through a loss of faith, my former students, Jesuits, priests. I speak from the depths of my heart when I ask you, sisters, to look to this faith of yours to make sure that our faith will stand firm. The world is the same, which means the ideas that are rampant all around us are the ideas rampant around those who have weakened and left. It's the same culture. We too are living in the 20th century, and it happens to be the same America. By and large, we read the same newspapers and magazines, exposed to the same media, to the same powerful psychological pressure to conformity. You see, the world wants conformists, and it crushes those who resist. The pressure is on us, no less or more than it was on those whom we talk about and pray for. So why is it an opportunity and therefore a challenge? Because we are called upon as we've never been called upon before. I would say that no other religious in history, honestly, in all the 19 plus centuries of the church's existence, have religious been called upon to look to the strength of their faith as they are today. Because what is being challenged and toppled is not church steeples, but the faith of Christians. Why is it a challenge and therefore an opportunity? Because, having been taught by St. Paul that we carry our faith in fragile vessels, we shall not presume on our own strength, which means a lot of things, as I hope to point out in the next 6 days. You see, I'd like to have the aura of faith over everything that we talk and think about during this retreat. That we can't make it alone, sisters. If we have so far thought we did, we didn't. Let's be sure the future, only God knows what it's going to be. We must depend more than we ever have on the help of God, which comes from constant, assiduous prayer. In other words, that we are to pray these days, maybe years, as never before, daily, for a stronger faith, especially as if it happens to you like it happens to me. Every day, something hits me that prompts me to say, Lord, I believe. Help my unbelief. Why is today, if it is a crisis, an opportunity for us? Because recognizing that the worst critic of our faith, in that sense the worst enemy of our faith, is not the learned unbeliever that we read about in books or magazines. It's not the open persecutor. The worst enemy of our faith is our own mind. This mind must make sure that our faith is clearly understood. Otherwise, it's going to plague us. The faith is kept inside. When it is lost inside. Inside the mind. And therefore, that if we haven't thought about this before, let's now prepare ourselves through such reading of sound literature, and the adjective is important. Books, periodicals, newspapers. Thank God, sisters, that the Catholic press is once more recovering its adjective. Listening to sound doctrine, and on superiors, never has there been a more incumbent duty than to make sure that those who guide, speak to, hear the confessions of, counsel the sisters, are themselves men of faith. Not all are. I know. And discussion, that we choose our company, and in dealing with others in the apostolate, that we help them and recommend strongly to them that no Christian can live a solitary existence. We need others, so that those with whom we talk about the things of faith are themselves people strong, loyal to that church founded on the rock, whose other name is Peter. In order to ensure a firm foundation and unassailable convictions, you see, the faith, for a lot of people, I'm afraid, have been emotional. It can't be anymore. Only conviction will last. And those convictions, therefore, must be strongly grounded so that we not only believe, but as far as possible, know why we believe. So that our certitude is not because, well, for you too, I suppose, in most cases, sister said so. You know. In spite, therefore, of all the ideas around us coming into our heads from no matter what supposedly learned source, that we've got what it takes to deal with those ideas, properly handled, will sharpen and deepen our faith. Imprudently, unwisely dealt with, can weaken and destroy it. Why are we justified in saying that what we call a crisis of faith is also an opportunity and therefore a challenge? I am now on my fourth reason. Understanding that we have the duty, three times over, to share our faith with others and strengthen those who are weak, once through baptism, once again through confirmation, and still again through our religious vocation, a triple duty to both be strong in faith ourselves and strengthen others. We should look upon the present situation as a divine invitation. As we have never thought, perhaps, so seriously before, to find out, what is this faith that I'm supposed to believe? What does it mean? Because a large part of the strength of faith is clarity of ideas, as I desperately try telling my students. fuzzy ideas today are insecure ideas. But if our faith is clear, strong, that we then can help to strengthen others. And in today's world, our apostolate will cover many aspects. I can think of no more important purpose of the Catholic apostolate today than to strengthen the faith of the wavering. And the number today is legion. And they are not all adults. Right, sisters? Teenagers. Youngsters in grammar school. Pummeled by thousands of ideas. Having listened, I'm told, and watched the average American child up to 3,000 hours of television before it begins school in first grade, saturated with secularism, that we, strong in faith, and only such can do it, will exercise our apostolate to help the faith of those on whose faith everything else depends. As the retreat progresses, we shall see, I hope, with God's grace, what this implies. It implies, and this is my epilogue, and I keep coming up with numbers, three things. It will imply what we still need to become and be the strong believers that the church needs these days. Sisters, I want to share with you my deepest conviction, the grave need of knowing what the weaknesses in our faith are. In plain English, what are we not absolutely sure about? Like what? Like the value of being a religious. Pretty fundamental, isn't it? So first to find out what we still need to become and be that kind of believer which today's people of God gravely need. Secondly, how we can become practical, stronger, and more dedicated believers in Christ and His teachings, not in spite of, but precisely because our faith is being so widely and deeply challenged. Here's the punchline, sisters. After all, the main purpose of a retreat, I presume, for religious, is to be better religious. Well, that's the most effective and indispensable way of becoming stronger in faith. This is not a prophecy or even a prediction. It is a statistical fact.
This conference is continued on Side B.